The recordings have been started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the Policy and Implementation Working Group call on the 29th of April, 2015. On the call today, we have Chuck Cohn, Cheryl Langanor, Amr Elgar, Greg Shatton, Avery Doria, and Alan Greenberg. Joining us a little late today will be Michael Graham. I show apologies from J. Scott Evans. From staff, we have Marika Koenig, Mary Wong, Karen Lynn, Amy Gibbons, Barry Cobb, and myself, Terry Agnew. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Chuck.
Thanks a lot, Terry, and welcome everyone to our weekly call. I think we're getting close to getting through public comments. I'd like to think that we can finish it in today's meeting and maybe one next week. And I appreciate the persistence and regularity with which all of you have participated in this. So today, let me ask, does anybody have an update to a statement of interest? And secondly, let me ask, is anybody not in Adobe chat? Okay, good. So let's go ahead and start. Now, before we actually get to question 10, I want to make sure we try and get resolution on, I think there were three previous discussions that we've had, some carrying over the last couple meetings, and I want to make sure that I have a correct understanding in terms of where we're at. With regard to the issue regarding competing motions, my understanding is that the approach that Mary proposed has now, I think, been accepted by everyone. If you disagree with that, please speak up. Marika, go ahead.
This is Marika. Just to know that what you now see on your screen is a revised version in which I indeed incorporated the language that was suggested by Mary, as no objections were received as far as I'm aware, and also incorporates two other suggestions that were made on the list by Armour, which I think I guess we get to next. And I'll circulate, of course, this version immediately following our meeting.
Thank you very much, Marika. So take a look at that. Most of you have probably seen the discussion on the list on it. And if there are any concerns, speak up now, or we'll assume we can put that one to bed. The second issue had to do with the possibility of adding some language for the GGP that would instead of just saying no contractual obligations for registries and registrars, would say a similar thing for registrants. Now, Greg has submitted a concern with the compromise language on that. And so, Greg, I'm going to ask you to, although your email, I think, was pretty clear, but everybody may not have seen it. So if you would talk to that, and let's talk, and let's all see if we can bridge the gap that Greg has identified. Go ahead, Greg.
Thank you, Chuck. Greg Shatton for the record. We're talking now about the language about that the intended outcome is not expected to result in new consensus policies, including but not limited to any new contractual obligations for contracted parties. My concern with the language, and maybe it's just a linguistic concern, is that we're kind of back to where we started from, and that it kind of begs the question of how do you identify when something is a new consensus policy when it's coming up in the context of implementation. And the second concern is that this could be misconstrued in that the intended outcome of any policy implementation process is new consensus policy, so that perhaps this language could be read that the GTP can't be used during the implementation process of a new consensus policy. So maybe I'm overthinking things, but in terms of how other people might view this, they might not understand that this is actually intended to be used during the implementation of new consensus policies or changes to consensus policies, and that the prohibition is against any additional new consensus policies other than the consensus policy that is being implemented, if that makes sense. I'm not sure if that helps in terms of suggesting new language, but that is at least the concern that I feel looking at this language. Thanks.
Well, thanks, Greg, and this is Chuck. So while Alan's speaking, if you can think about how we might tweak the language to deal with your concern, I'd appreciate that. Alan, go ahead.
Thank you. If I understand correctly, guidance processes are to help interpret the policy. So a guidance process is not supposed to establish new policy, not a new consensus policy, but new policy. But may, and I'm not trying to craft language here, but may add nuances or interpretation to the policy to help in its implementation. So the end result of the guidance process is to help craft perhaps a consensus policy, that is the actual words that eventually come out of a PDP process. But all it's doing is helping to interpret and better define the intent of the consensus policy that was recommended, or the policy that was recommended. I think that's consistent with what we've been saying till now.
This is Chuck. I would agree with you. I think that's consistent with what we've been saying. A GGP doesn't have to just be used for clarifying consensus policy. It could be used for other issues as well. But in the case of a consensus policy and the implementation of that policy, I think you're right on. So is there a way, Greg, have you come up with a way maybe, or someone else if you have a suggestion, as to how we could tweak the language to deal with your concern?
Well, this is Greg. A couple of possibilities I've thought about is actually, and looking at the language, to say after the intended outcome to put in of the GGP, and to change the word result to create, so that it would read that it has determined that the intended outcome of the GGP is not expected to create new consensus policies.
Okay, and I see that Marika is putting in that in there. Is that captured correctly, Greg?
Let me see. I've got too many screens and not enough eyeballs.
I know. And even if you had more eyeballs, you still would have trouble.
Yes, it is captured perfectly.
Okay. Does anybody have any concerns about that edit?
Question. Are we just crafting the answer to the concern, or are we crafting new words for the report here?
That last column is for, I think, indicating that it would be new words in the report.
Okay. I'm not quite sure of the full context. We may want to add the clarification after that, saying, it may well... the guidance for the GGP may provide interpretation or help in the implementation of a consensus of the policy. Sorry, I'm struggling because we've said that it is not expected, but we are not saying what it is expected, and I think we need that in this case.
You're saying, this is Chuck Allen, so you're saying that we should say what's expected out of a GGP?
Yeah, I think to complement what you're saying, what it isn't, provided clarity with the implementation. Yeah, I think what Marika has there is fine.
Okay, Marika, let me go to you, and then I'll go to Barry.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to note that, indeed, this is a specific section that is currently in the report to which, indeed, Amr suggested adding language which was in bold, and I probably now need to figure out which other parts we added so we can also add those in bold to clear what is going to be changed. And I'll find that relevant section, of course, make those updates.
Thanks, Marika. Barry, your turn.
Thank you, Chuck. Barry Cobb, for the record. Just in hearing the dialogue, I'm not sure that this is going to be helpful, but maybe it is. And I'm reminiscing of the implementation framework that Karen and her team put together that's a part of this report. But in that aspect, I think we were very careful to make a distinction between consensus recommendations versus consensus policies, because technically it doesn't become a consensus policy until the policy effective date. And only up till that time, it's a consensus recommendation. And I think what you, this dialogue here sounded a little confusing, so hopefully you can find that helpful.
Thanks, Barry. So,
It's Alan. I think just removing consensus policy in quotes and simply saying create new policy.
I don't have any problem with that. Does anyone else? Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I do, because I don't think we have a definition of what policy is. For example, I could see as well that this process would create, indeed, which I think is indeed an interpretation of a consensus policy, certain rules or guidance, which some may label as a policy. So I would be more comfortable in making clear what we're talking about here is, contractual obligations which are created through consensus policies. And maybe to Barry's point, one possible clarification could be to make it consensus policy recommendations. So indeed to distinguish between when it becomes a consensus policy on the date of implementation or effective date versus what comes out of a GNSO PDP, which are consensus policy recommendations. So I don't know if that helps.
Marika, it's Alan. I retract my statement in light of what you said, but also realizing a GGP can produce new policy. It can't produce new consensus policy, but it can produce new policy. So Marika's right. We need to leave consensus policy there.
Thanks, Alan. Okay, and thanks, Marika. And let's see if we have covered Barry's thought there. Should we put anything about recommended policy, or maybe we say recommended or approved policy? They're just at different time frames in the cycle. Marika, is that okay?
But this is Marika. The way I fixed this basically said to create new consensus policy recommendations.
Okay. Is that okay?
To
anybody object to the language we have there? All right. Thanks, Amr, for that. Agree. Let's go on into the third item. The third item that we have been discussing for a while is regard to the EPDP. And Amr has made the recommendation that we need to make sure or make clear, and I supported his recommendation in that regard, is to make clear that an EPDP cannot be used to revisit an issue that's already been covered unless there are new circumstances that come into play. So, for example, And Amr, if you want to say it better than I can, please feel free. But if a particular group didn't get what they wanted in the PDP process, the ePDP would not be a tool that could be used to take a second crack at it, unless new circumstances have arisen. Okay, and I think that's the point that Marika made on our list. So I think, Marika, you already have language to that effect, and you can see it on there. I'll let each of you read it, and I'll turn it to Alan.
Thank you. I'm not sure that's correct. For instance, if a policy goes to the board and the board says, GNSO, I don't think you considered the public interest sufficiently in this. Look at it again. Nothing's changed, but we're looking at it again, and ePDP, I think, is exactly the right tool to use for it.
Well, I'm not sure about it. This is Chuck Allen. I'm not sure about that, because I think if the board comes back and doesn't approve a PDP recommendation, then it goes back to the PDP working group for consideration. It wouldn't need an ePDP, would it?
PDP working groups could be dissolved at that point. The GNSO Council has approved them. They passed on to the board.
I don't think we should dissolve them until they're officially, even though they may have hoped that it was dissolved. I don't think we should officially dissolve them until the board actually approves it. But you raise a good point.
Well, but just think, we still have open recommendations today from the IGO, INGO group.
And this is Marika, if I can, interject there is a specific process in place to deal with those items, and Mary can share that language with the list, but it's a specific provision that deals with, indeed, changes that may need to be made to policy recommendations prior to board adoption. So I think that's covered. But to Alan's point, I think the way we've currently worded it, I think it's quite specific. That really says that should not be used as a tool to reopen the issue only because a stakeholder didn't like the conclusion of a previously held process. So I think it's pretty specific that it really is, if someone says, well, we tried one time, didn't like it, let's try again. But I think the circumstance you described is a different kind of environment where, you know, the board comes back, or, you know, another situation could be where indeed the board has adopted recommendations, but then maybe, you know, the GAC issues advice, and that needs to be reconciled. I think in those cases, you know, you could maybe foresee that GGP could be possibly appropriate, but I think the way it's currently worded, it wouldn't preclude the council from using that process, because it says specifically if there's one stakeholder that says, the first time I didn't get my way, you know, can we try it again to see if I can change people's minds without any new information or change circumstances?
Yeah, Marika, I agree, but Chuck's wording didn't cover that. That's why I had raised my hand.
So the solution is to ignore Chuck's wording and look at Marika's. Okay. Okay. Are you okay with that, Alan?
Yeah, I think so. Just on the reference to there is an existing procedure for the GNSO to handle a recommendation that the board has not yet approved. We saw how well that worked last time, so I'm not sure I want to rely on that.
Yeah. Okay, any objections then to this latest language? Okay. Before we go to 10, I just have a comment to make. When we produce our final report, it seems to me that it would be helpful to produce it a red line version of the version that was posted for public comment, and the change, and that would then highlight the changes we made after the public comment period. I guess my first question is it too late to consider that? Or is it feasible to do that? And, of course, then does everyone agree that that would be helpful? So my first question is to staff. Marika and Mary, is that a feasible approach? Go ahead, Marika.
Yes, this is Marika. Yes, we can definitely do so. The only thing may be that there may be a lot of red line that are, formatting changes, changing, you know, initial to final, but it shouldn't be a problem to produce a redline version.
I know it's a little bit of a hassle, but what I would suggest is to accept all the formatting edits. And so the only ones they see are the actual material ones. At least the way I do it, I go through and I think individually accept all of those. And that takes a little bit of time, but I think it cleans up the document, the red line, a lot.
Yeah, it's Alan. I'm not at my computer. You can, you know, if the changes aren't too complex, you can actually give the old and the new version to Word, and it will create the red line version. Sometimes it guesses wrong, but usually it's pretty good.
Okay. I'll let staff figure out how they are most comfortable doing that. But I think it will be helpful. It'll show make it very clear how we responded to public comments to show the red line. And for people who don't care, because maybe they didn't submit comments, they can go straight to the clean version. So that would be fine. Okay, now let's go to question 10. Question 10, I think, if you starts on the bottom of page 27. As I looked ahead at question 10 and the public comments there that are in the table, it looks like there's definitely support for that. And by the way, I won't say this every time, and I really don't mean any disrespect for John Poole, but I'm not going to spend time talking about John Poole's comments in our meeting today unless somebody demands it, because he seemed to be in a different world than everyone else who commented on this. So if you think I'm wrong on that, I'll accept the criticism, okay? Other than that, the only comment really was from the registries there, and you can see what that says. I'm going to ask Marika to comment on that, because I think she has a good response for the concern expressed by the registries.
So this is Marika. So in reading this comment, the way I understood it or interpreted it is basically asking the question, what will be different if the council adopts, you know, GGP recommendations and submit those to the board compared to the current environment. And as an example, they give the letter of the GAC regarding the release of two-letter TLDs. And my interpretation is that in the world of a GGP, basically, if those are adopted with a supermajority vote by the council, there will be an obligation on the board to consider those recommendations. They still have the ability to turn those down, but we'll need to say, you know, why they're doing so and need to meet a certain voting threshold in order to do so. In the current environment, there is no such obligation. And even if the GNC Council would have, you know, submitted a letter in a similar nature, there would be no obligation from the board side to deal with that. So I think, you know, even though, it doesn't guarantee that the GNSO recommendations would stand, there is at least a clear and predictable process in place that would, you know, deal with the recommendations and, you know, require the board as well to provide a rationale if they should decide that the recommendations are not in the interest of ICANN or the broader community.
Thanks, Marika. This is Chuck again, and I think that makes up the working group response in that, and Marika will put that in there as a response. Greg, on the IPC comment, I think they're absolutely right in terms of the understanding that's expressed there. Do you think any more needs to be said about that? Or should we maybe just say the IPC's interpretation is correct?
I think that seems fine to me.
Okay. All right. So that'll Marika will put that in there, too, so that we have that. So I think 10 is done, unless anybody has another concern. Okay. Moving ahead to number 11. And on number 11, we actually have some divergence Although when Marika and Mara and I were talking about this before, we don't think it would be hard to resolve. We don't think the yeses and nos are really that far apart. But what I'd like to ask is Amr, or if someone else wants to do it from the NCSG, to talk about the NCSG comment. And I don't think we have anybody from the ISPs. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. But Amr, are you willing to talk about the NCSG's comment, comment 11.6?
No, thanks, Chuck. Amr, I am willing, but I would have to refresh my memory on what the answer was. There it is.
Okay. Yeah, Marika was busy adding those working group responses up above, so... I'll let everybody look at this. Just provide a minute to take a look at 11.6.
Okay, yeah. Samer again. I think the NCSG concern here was that there may sometimes be a need for a GGP recommendation to include a recommendation that a PDP or an ePDP be launched in the event that new contractual requirements or consensus policies are needed in order to carry out a certain recommendation. So that was something, like Greg said, there may be some disagreement or on the subjectivity of whether something may be or may not be a consensus policy. So I guess that was the thinking when we provided this answer, is that if there is not a supermajority support for recommendations coming out of a GGP, maybe because some feel that actual consensus policies need to be developed, and so a different process may be necessary to address specific recommendations coming out of a GGP.
Thanks, Amr. Appreciate that. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. Maybe to add to that, another consideration that the working group may want to have in relation to this issue is, and I think at least there was a little bit the thinking from my side when, you know, the way that it was worded and originally indeed only having a supermajority support a GGP go to the board is as well, you know, what is the board expected to do with recommendations that do not have supermajority support? And again, I think it goes a bit back to the conversation that these recommendations are expected or intended to provide, you know, the consensus view of the GNSO. And you can ask yourself, is that achieved if it is only adopted by a simple majority? I think in the PDP context, there is indeed this provision that says that if the recommendations are not adopted by a supermajority vote, you know, the board still needs to consider those and actually has a lower voting threshold to turn those around. But I think a question that has been asked by some in the community, if that would happen, and I'm at least not aware of any circumstances in which that has happened, would those policy recommendations still be enforceable on contracted parties? As I understand it, I think the agreements do specify that these should be consensus recommendations. And again, the question is, you know, is a simple majority, could that be defined as consensus, or is the supermajority vote really the expression of the GNSO Council's view of consensus? And again, I think for that reason, the group may want to consider that in this case, indeed, a supermajority vote is appropriate for passing on recommendations, and anything below that means that there just is not sufficient support in that form. And I think, as Amr alluded to as well, it may be a reflection because some people believe it actually needs to be dealt with as a result of a PDP, or maybe in another way, or there's just not enough support to do so. And again, if there's no clarity on what the board then is expected to do with those recommendations, or whether it's purely at the discretion of the board whether they will implement those. I mean, not sure how much value there is then in creating that kind of ambiguity on what is expected when GGP recommendations don't meet a supermajority support level.
Thanks, Marika. Chuck again. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, just commenting on the somewhat confusing words in the current bylaws. I've always interpreted it that if the GNSO
passes something with a majority and the board doesn't overturn it, it is policy. Probably not enforceable consensus policy, but policy nonetheless. So if it doesn't involve a contractual change, it could stand. And that's my interpretation. And as Marika pointed out, I don't think it's ever happened.
And, Alan, just to qualify that one little bit, this is Chuck, the board still has to approve it. It doesn't just default to policy, but even if it's just a simple majority of the GNSO council, the board would still have to specifically approve it. To not approve it, though, they wouldn't need the supermajority to not approve it.
That's right. It's a different threshold, but they still, of course,
yeah,
they have to go through
right.
the motions
exactly.
approving.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Thank you, Ellen, for that. And so, let me ask a question of everyone on this. Does anybody object if we go with the suggestions of the NCSG and the ISPCP, and kind of eliminate this issue of a simple majority, and like we do with a PDP? Does anybody object to going that direction? And then, of course, then in the last column, we would actually change our issue. We would change the recommendations in the report to correspond with that. Anybody object to that? Okay. All right. So we will make a change there in response to the comments of those two groups. And I find it, I really don't think the registries are going to have any problem with that. And I think the working group response that Marika put in the third column will explain that. And so hopefully that would be true of others as well, including the IPC. Greg, do you agree with that? You're here to speak for the IPC. Do you see any problems from your perspective representing the IPC?
Thanks, Chuck. No, I don't. I don't object to this. I think that this is a sensible way to go. I think this is an area where there were a variety of opinions within the IPC. So I think we can live with this.
Thanks,
this
Greg.
Approach.
Any other comments on then question 11? Okay, Marika.
Yeah, and then this is Marika, and just to note as well, like, in such a case where it would not meet the supermajority voting threshold, of course, the GNSO Council would have then as well the ability to go back to the GGP team and say, look, it actually didn't meet the support that is needed, so, here are some of the feedback or reasons why people voted it down, and, maybe you want to do a bit more work if the council deems it to be appropriate. So I think that maybe a circumstance, and similarly that can happen as well. I think in the PDP working group, or certain questions or issues are passed back. So even though it may fail at the voting level, it doesn't mean that the issue cannot be resolved by further conversations or further work.
Thanks, Marika. It's Chuck again, and let me say give a special welcome to Michael. I know he's been traveling, and it's been difficult to participate. He has been, I know, keeping up to speed by listening to the recordings and so forth. But, Michael, feel free to jump in because you haven't been able to participate directly in some of the discussions we've been having. So if you have a question or something new to add, of course we welcome that. So.
Yeah, I'll track it for that, and thank you. I'm still coming up to speed.
Okay, well, feel free to jump in, even if you don't think you're totally up to speed. That would be perfectly fine. All right, going on to question 12. Question 12, there's just the everybody says yes except for the IPC. The IPC is being difficult here. So, Greg, I'm, of course, being a little bit facetious, but could you talk to the IPC's answer of no and then requiring a supermajority to terminate a GGP? Could you tell us where the IPC is coming from on that?
Well, first, I note that we're not alone, that John Poole agrees with us.
Oh, good. If you want to claim that, you're welcome to.
I was only noting it, not claiming it. I have to admit that I'm not sure why we said this. It's unfortunate that Ann Aikman-Scalise is not with us. She might recall why we were feeling that it should be a supermajority. So with apologies, I'm going to have to draw a blank on this, and I won't rely on the fact that John Poole agrees with me. Or with the IPC, not necessarily me.
Thanks, Greg. And I confess, and you've probably seen it several times, that there have been quite a few cases where I wasn't totally clear on the registry position either, so you're not going to get any criticism from me. So on this one, let's do this. I think my inclination is to go ahead and go with the yes vote. But Marika or Mary, would one of you send a message? It can be on the list, but ask Anne if she can recall why the IPC suggested no on this and requiring a supermajority vote, and whether she sees it being a big problem if we just go with the majority in this case. And then, of course, we can come back and visit, depending on what Anne's response is, we can come back and revisit 12 next week. Okay? Going on to 13, and 13 is a really easy one. I think we got all yeses there, unless anybody has. And again, I'm not including John in this. Okay, so we got all yeses. Any questions or comments on 13? And 13, of course, is the that the PDP manual be modified to require an IRT with the council being able to make an exception. So let me start with Marika, and then I'll go to Amr.
Yes, this is Marika. Maybe in response to Carlos's comment, because I think his point goes that the IRT shouldn't be closed. I think there we may just want to highlight what I think is currently in the principles as well, that in principle the invitation for the IRT would go to the original working group, which is typically open to anyone interested, so would automatically include people beyond the GNSO. And additional expertise may be sought by staff as needed. And, of course, in addition to that, there's also a public comment opportunity. So there are, beyond participation in the IRT, where the focus is really on operational expertise in most cases, there are other opportunities to provide input and participate in those efforts. For example, as well, IRTs typically meet as well at ICANN meetings if there are issues they need to discuss, and those meetings are also open and recorded and transcribed. So maybe it's something we can point out in our response, and that may hopefully reassure him with regards to the comment he made.
Excellent point, Marika. This is Chuck. And let's put the essence of what you just said in our response to Carlos's comment there. So that would be very good. Amr, you're up.
Thanks, Chuck Sommer. The NCSG did agree with this recommendation, but we did ask that in the event that the GNSO Council opted to not create a new IRT, and specifically in response to the example provided, if another IRT is already in place that could deal with the PDP recommendations, that the GNSO Council should also consider the composition of the existing IRT and what the composition of a new IRT may be, in case there are stakeholders who are missing from one and not the other. So, for example, if you have a specific stakeholder group, and I'll use the NCSG as an example, that is not part of an existing IRT that the GNSO Council decides to also give responsibility of following the implementation of the recommendations of a second process, and if the second process includes NCSG members who may want to be part of an IRT, then the council should also consider adding them to the first IRT that is taking on the work of both processes. Thanks.
Thanks, Amr. I confess to not following all of that. So the NCSG would have each IRT is unique, right? It's not as if there's one IRT that covers all implementation issues, but there would be one for each policy that has to be implemented or policies. Help me understand what the comment is, because the NCSG could certainly, like Marika shared in response to Carlos's comment, could be a part of the IRT for a specific implementation effort. So what specifically are you suggesting?
Okay, I'll try to do this better. Part of the recommendation here is that the GNS... No, I don't think so. It's probably me. part of the recommendation here is that the GNSO Council can opt not to launch an IRT following a PDP, for example. And one of the reasons this could happen, and this is in the example provided, is that if there is an already existing IRT that can do the work for two different PDPs. So in making this determination, the GNSO Council should consider the composition of the existing IRT to make sure that all the stakeholders from the second PDP also exist in the first one where an IRT is already in place. Does that help at all?
Yes, I think it does. I get it now. So let me just ask another clarifying question, though. This is Chuck speaking. If in that situation where they decide to use an existing IRT, are you then suggesting that new members be allowed to join the IRT, the existing one? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, I got it. And, I mean, I think that makes sense. Now the question is, do we need to put something and do we need to change our wording to make that clear, or do the existing procedures allow that, or at least not prevent it? Marika?
This is Marika. As far as I'm aware, I don't think that is prevented by the current rules. I think there's nothing that says, you know, after X day, no new members are taken. And I think that is actually, you know, similar, I think, to GNSO working groups. My assumption as well that there's a kind of regular assessment depending on the issues that are being discussed. Do we have, you know, the relevant expertise around the table, or are certain groups missing? And again, if you know, someone comes forward and says, you know, I would like to participate, and you know, this is what I bring to the table, I don't think either there's a procedure or process that says, no, that is not accepted or not allowed. So I don't think that is a current limitation in the way the rules are written. But I think from a staff side, we're happy to have a look at that and then maybe call that specifically out in relation to the recommendation of the, if or when the council would decide not to create an IRT, maybe to call out there, but could have, you know, would have the ability to direct the existing IRT to ensure that it has, you know, the relevant expertise or representation or something along those lines.
Thanks, Marika. Chuck again. So it sounds to me like it would be helpful in the last column there on the recommended action to actually add some language in pretty much saying what you just said, Marika. Does anybody disagree with that? Not really changing the recommendation that we're making, but it's clarifying that in a case where they elect not to initiate an IRT, but maybe use an existing group, that due diligence be done to make sure that the right expertise is there and open up to new volunteers if needed. Okay. No objections to that? Okay. Thanks, Amr, and thanks, Marika, for keeping up with us here. Anything else on 13? Okay, let's go to 14. Now, I really wish that Barlos was on the call, as I have wished quite a few times on our calls, because in 14, and I'm going to come back to you, Greg, and you, Amr, again, on the IPC and NCSG comments, but I confess that I just put a question mark with regard to why Carlos said no on question 14 with regard to the principles. Can anybody help me out there, maybe? I know you can't necessarily speak for Carlos, but maybe you understand it better than I do. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I'm just wondering if this maybe goes back to his previous comment where I think he seems to assume that, you know, an IRT would be kind of, you know, a closed club without any kind of, you know, external influence or consultation with others. So I don't know if that is what lies, you know, underneath his comment here, as he, you know, refers to conflict of interest and not sustainable over time. So possibly it's already addressed by, you know, our clarifications that, you know, IRTs are expected to operate in a similar manner of transparency. And maybe it's also worth noting that I think as we currently do, for example, the GNSO project list reports on the status of implementation of policy recommendations. So again, as the manager of the policy development process, it also has an oversight role in that way on what is going on. So I think that there are various mechanisms by which, you know, people can ring the bell if they believe that indeed there's something going on there that it's in conflict or not in adherence with the standards that we expect these groups to operate in. So again, just speculation on my behalf, but it may be linked to his previous comment further up.
Thanks, Marika. And I, in my own opinion, and we'll listen to Michael here, he may have another suggestion, but I think it's reasonable to respond the way you just suggested, assuming that we're understanding what the concern is. But I think that's a good effort to try and address what we think he's talking about there. And it might be a good idea to do something similar to what we did with regard to Anne on a previous question and reach out to Carlos on the list and see if our response addressed his concern. So if Marika and Mary can make sure that happens, that would be great. Let's go to Michael.
Yeah, I just sort of put the words in my mouth, and I agree with Marika. I think this stems from the same concern that he was expressing before, and I would hope that, you know, the answer that we're providing in that regard would address part of this. But I also agree that, you know, reach out to him and see if that is the case or if there's some other concern that he's raising here.
Thank you very much, Michael. Anybody else have a comment or a question on this one? Okay. All right. Then I think that covers question 14. So that brings us to the general questions. If we're not careful, we could almost finish today except for the follow-up that we have. Amr, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. Amr, just want to point out we're not actually done with question 14 yet.
I skipped right past that page, and thank you for setting me straight. In both the comments by the IPC and the NCG, they both make a suggestion. They support the recommendation, but they make some suggestions that might involve some action items on our part in terms of maybe adding some words or something along with the recommendation. So let me, since 14.4 comes, in fact, since Amr is the one that set me back on track here. Let's start with the NCSG.
All right. Thanks, Chuck. This is Amr. The NCSG did support the recommendation. However, there seems to be what I could at least identify as a sort of a discrepancy between the appeals process in the initial report for an IRT as opposed to the appeals process in a working group. This is the process when there is a disagreement between a working group member and the chair of a working group, and how the council liaison's role would fit here, and under what circumstances the council liaison would have to elevate this issue to the GNSO council, which is the chartering organization. And that's clearly outlined in the GNSO working group guidelines. What we're suggesting here for an IRT is something similar, except, of course, there's no IRT chair. This role is carried out by GDD staff. But the difference here is in the event of a conflict that is not resolvable, there would have to be a consensus level among the IRT members to sort of determine whether the council liaison will take the issue to the GNSO council or not. In a PDP working group, this consensus level is not required, but we're saying on the IRT it is. So I'm just wondering why we're making that recommendation. Thanks.
Thanks, Amr. Before I go on to Greg on the IPC comments, which appear maybe at least a little bit related to this, can anybody respond to Amr's question there on this? I can't. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I probably would need to look back at the report, and I'm also looking at maybe Karen, because she may recall exactly why this was written this way. But what I can imagine in this case is that maybe the way it's done is to ensure that it's not, you know, one individual in the IRT that, you know, has a specific issue, while everyone else in the IRT believes that that's just a, you know, that individual that has a specific point of view that indeed doesn't align with, you know, what GDD staff believes is the right approach, but neither has any support in the rest of the IRT. So I think I can imagine that may be the reason why it is suggested that there should be kind of consensus call, or at least a look around the room. You know, do others believe as well that this is indeed a disagreement that needs to be, you know, taken up to the GNSO Council and addressed there? Or is this really, you know, one person that is just trying to, you know, get their views pushed through without any kind of support, nor from other members in the IRT, nor GDD staff? But again, I would need to reread the exact language, but that could be a possible explanation.
But, and if you'll do that, that would be much appreciated, Marika. This is Chuck. Now, Amr, a question for you. So is it the NCSG's position that the liaison, if there is disagreement, the liaison could, in essence, just go to the GNSO Council on it without any particular defined level of consensus? Is that what I'm hearing?
Ms. Sommer, there are conditions that need to be met, and those would be that the chair of the IRT or the GDD staff member responsible cannot resolve the issue with a member of the IRT. This issue, I guess, it could take different forms. But yes, at that point, it would make sense that the liaison would have to go back to the GNSO Council to make a decision on this. Even if it is just one member of the IRT, I believe it's the same is true for a working group, a GNSO working group. And I would imagine that the standard should be the same for both types of groups or teams. Thanks.
Now, Marika, thanks, Amrit, Chuck. Marika raises an interesting question. Can an individual raise an issue in the council? I believe it also requires at least more than one person, but I would, and she's going to check that. But But let me suggest this, unless people think this is not a good idea. Amr, if you could suggest, and you can do this after this meeting, you need to do it on the fly here, but if you could recommend some language that we could consider on the list and then ultimately in our meeting next week to address the concern that you have, and then we can discuss it on the list and hopefully finalize it next week. And having said that, I'll give you a chance to think about that, Amr, if you're okay with that, and then let's go to Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. So I just pulled up the language from the GNSO operating procedures in relation to the appeal process, and I'm assuming that that is what, that's exactly the section that the NCC is referring to in its comment. And that actually refers specifically to when a working group member believes that his or her contributions are being systematically ignored or discounted, or wants to appeal a decision of the working group or charity organization. And they should first discuss those circumstances with the working group chair. And again, I think that it would here be the situation with the GDD. And then it says, in the event that the matter cannot be resolved satisfactorily, the working group member should request an opportunity to discuss the situation with the chair of the charity organization or the designated representative. So again, I think this is not a question of that a working group member would take it to the council for review or discussion, but it's an individual conversation between the chair of the GNSO in this case or the designated representative. So maybe that is something similar that could be applied here as well, that indeed if someone believes that their contributions are being ignored or they want to appeal a decision that has been made by the IRT, it is maybe then a conversation they can request with the council chair or their representative. Maybe that's indeed a similar way of dealing with this if that is agreeable to the rest in the group.
Thanks, Marika. Chuck again. And Aubrey, go ahead.
So that means that IRTs no longer have a liaison relationship? Because if they did, I would still assume that you would use that mechanism. Or is that a point that I've missed, that the IRT no longer has a liaison relationship to the council?
This is Chuck, and I'll let others speak up. I don't think the intent was to eliminate the liaison relationship. And
I hadn't thought so.
Yeah, and I think that, using the liaison relationship makes sense here. We spent quite a bit of time on that particular topic a few months ago. So how can we I think maintaining that makes sense at this point. I suggest, Amr, that you, as you're coming up with some language, that you keep in mind the process that exists today. And as well as so what Marika shared, but also keeping in mind Aubrey's good point that we want to maintain the liaison relationship. Does that make sense, Amr?
Yep, makes perfect sense. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Amr. And let's go to Greg, because the IPC also said yes, but, okay? And let's see whether there's something further we might be able to clarify to address the concerns of the IPC.
Thanks, Chuck. Greg Shatton, for the record. I think, there is some relationship between the NCSG and IPC comments, and we're both expecting to be troublemakers, or expecting that somebody will be a troublemaker. And I say that with affection. And I think that the yes but is actually fairly straightforward in that we believe that there should be in addition to the path that is being discussed in response to the NCSG of trying to work it out or escalate the issue, there should also be the ability to have a minority opinion in the case of a controversy or a non-full consensus. situation arising in an IRT.
So, thanks, Greg. This is Chuck. And to me, that seems pretty straightforward that it should be there, but I think we should say it. And I think that's what the IPC is suggesting.
Yes.
That's consistent with everything in the GNSO, I think, in working groups and so forth. So, so an action item, then we would add, then in the last column, would be some language that points that out, that the opportunity of when there's not full agreement in an IRT, there needs to be the opportunity for a minority statement. Did I say that okay, Greg?
Yes, you did, Chuck.
Thanks. Alan, go ahead.
I have a question. Who does this minority opinion go to?
Well, the IRT is going to make its recommendations with regard to implementation, your question is really good. Maybe Marika can answer.
I mean,
who does the where do the IRT recommendations go?
In my understanding, anyway, an IRT does not do its work and then the implementation happens. It's part of the ongoing process of implementation.
Right.
So I understand a minority report registers a disagreement, but I'm just not sure who it goes to or what happens with it.
Marika, would you like to respond to that?
Yeah, this is Marika. I think Alan is absolutely right. I think typically the work of the IRT consists of working with ICANN staff on developing the implementation plan, and that plan is what is put out for public comment. You know, however, in this scenario, and I think the provision of minority reports, there could potentially be a scenario where everyone but one person agrees with, you know, the proposed implementation plan, and that one person wants to note their objection or, you know, where they would like to see something else, and that, for example, could be put out together with the public comment forum that goes out on the implementation plan. Similarly, for example, when an issue is taken back to the GNSO Council, again, there may be a statement from the IRT on a certain issue where, for example, majority of people see a problem with how implementation is approached, and someone, you know, does not agree with that it is an issue, and they may want to make a statement in that regard. So I think, indeed, typically there is no IRT report or recommendation, but there may be certain circumstances where in which a member may want to, you know, provide a minority opinion or statement. And again, I think we can look at the report and see where that may best fit, and then the group can look at whether that indeed was the right place or not, and as envisioned by the IPC.
Thanks, Marika. This is Chuck. Greg, go ahead.
Thanks. I think the answer to the question is in the last sentence of the IPC comment, and I see that Avery said something similar in the chat, that we're looking for a mechanism that, among other things, would advise the GNSO Council that this minority opinion was being expressed. I think also that in terms of that where recommendations are being made by an IRT, that where there is enough of minority, the minority opinion is being expressed, that the minority recommendation, in essence, should be expressed as well.
Thanks, Greg. Chuck, Aubrey, go ahead.
Thank you. Aubrey speaking. Yeah, I guess I had sort of made an assumption that the IRT was still an entity chartered by the GNSO, and in essence, all the rules, the blanket rules of minority statements, of you come to council if things aren't working right, of liaison relationships, all still pertained, and that this wasn't really a new kind of beast completely, but that it inherited, you know, in the sense of a function inheriting from a parent function, all of the same connection mechanisms, communication mechanisms, while it was doing the job, and didn't need to have those explicitly stated. But, you know, I have been getting the impression during the conversation that perhaps that assumption is wrong, and it needs to be stated somehow explicitly that, you know, it really is subject to the same basic conditions of being a working group, you know, except that it's post-working group. But and am I alone in having made that assumption? Thanks.
Thank you, Avrina. And you're not alone, because I know I have the same feeling. And, in fact, I think you said it. I suspect it, assuming we all agree on it, that it does need to be explicitly stated. But let me go on to Greg, is that an old hand?
Very old.
Okay. And Alan, you're up.
Thank you. A question, I guess, for Marika. The concept of a public comment on an IRT or on a policy implementation plan. I just noticed one on the IRTPC for the first time, and I'm curious, have these been going on for a while, and is that now standard, or is it just because they had a particular question they weren't sure about?
Alan, this is Chuck, and I'll let Marika respond, but it's what I was going to comment when I what I was going to say is I think there's an overarching issue that we need to deal with that's come out of this discussion, and I'll stop there and let others talk and then come back if it's not covered. So, Karen, please.
Thank you, Chuck. This is Karen Lentz. So I will just share my perspective on what we're talking about in terms of the IRT, and I'm not sure if it's different or the same as what everyone has been saying. But, you know, the way I sort of envision it, the output of an IRT is the implementation itself. So it's unlike a working group where you would have a report or recommendations. Their deliverable is the implementation itself. They have the role that they have that we've been talking about in this group in terms of being a link between the PDP and the implementation work and being, you know, within the purview of the GNSO's responsibility. I think where a statement or of, you know, majority or minority would be relevant would be where there's a question about consistency with the policy recommendations. And in that case, you may have a difference of opinion, not so much whether an implementation plan is a good idea, but about that question in terms of the alignment of the implementation plan that the IRT came up with the intent of the policy advice. So I hope that helps.
Thanks, Karen. Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. I just put my hand up to respond to Alan's question concerning a public comment. And I think as far as I'm aware, I think it is pretty standard practice that before implementation language or an implementation plan is you know, formally announced and considered done, that there is a public comment period. I think only in instances where the policy recommendations were so specific and there was actually no real implementation to be done, I think there may have been cases where we just move forward if you know, specific language was provided and nothing else or what was needed. But I think it's pretty standard practice, and we need to look back at the report, but I think it calls out there as well as part of the process that it is an expected step in, you know, the overall the waterfall model, that would be an opportunity for comment before things are finalized.
Thanks, Marika. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say thank you. It somehow eluded me that that's happening, and I guess we need to make sure that we factor in that comment period in our overall timelines as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. And Karen, I want to come back to you if I can. In the, I need you to refresh my memory a little bit, because all of this is stretched over such a long period of time. But in the framework that your team developed and modified with lots of input from this working group, how does what we're talking about now fit into that? Without me having, I haven't gone back and looked at it. Okay. But so the IRT develops an implementation plan, And regardless of whether there's any dispute about the plan itself, what happens to that implementation plan in that framework?
Thanks, Chuck. So this is Karen Lentz. So typically in the process that we have shown in the framework, there once the implementation plan is developed, it's sort of a preliminary one is developed before the IRT convenes so that they have that to review. Essentially the group decides whether to post that for comment, but there's a strong presumption that it will. So the IRT convenes with some draft language and an implementation plan, provides their input into that, and determines basically when to post it for comment. And then depending on what the comments are, there could be, several additional changes which might necessitate another comment period, or there could be, essentially very few.
Thank you, Karen. So my first question, this is Chuck, my first question is should it be just a strong presumption of a comment period, or should it always be a comment period? And I'm not suggesting an answer, but based on what you said, that's a question that comes to mind. And then my second question is, what is the role of the GNSO Council as the policy manager at that point? And Karen, I didn't expect you to answer the strong presumption question. I threw that out for the whole group. You might be able to answer the second question, though.
Okay, thanks, Chuck. I wasn't sure if they were questions for me or not. But on the role of the GNSO Council, so the purpose of or one of the purposes of the IRT is to have that link with the council so that it is communicated, this is the status, this is the implementation plan, and where they're, in a case where you have an issue about, misalignment with the policy advice or, some other issue that the IRT or some IRT members bring to the attention of the council, that is their role to invoke a process to resolve an issue where it's needed. But in terms of the mechanical, submit comments, review with the IRT, implement the policy, there's not really a role once the, once you get to the end of the IRT and if there have been no issues raised that would require GNSO involvement right now, there's no additional sort of explicit step there.
Thank you, Karen. And so, assuming that the GNSO reps on the IRT, whoever they might be, are communicating with the broader council and so forth, it may not be needed to have a formal step there. Is everybody in agreement with that? And then I'd like people to also respond with regard to the public comment period, is a strong presumption of a public comment period sufficient? Any thoughts on that?
You mean as opposed to an absolute requirement?
Yes.
I'm fine with a presumption.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Aubrey. Anybody, if you don't think that's sufficient, please speak up. Otherwise, we'll assume that the direction that this is going is fine. Okay. It seems like by the silence and also with Aubrey's direct comment, it seems like everyone is okay with this. So is there anything else then with regard to question 14 that we should discuss? Okay. And then OMMER has an action item on this one to come back with some language to deal with the NCSG concern, and I think we've dealt with the IPC concern. So now I will – okay, Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. Sorry, just getting off mute. I actually noted it as an action item for staff to create similar language as what is currently present under Section 3.7. But, of course, I'm more than happy as well for Amar to make a suggestion of where that belongs. But if he is happy with us having a look on where that may fit, and then, of course, he can still comment or make alternative suggestions. But I think the idea was to follow the language in a similar way as it currently is provided in Section 3.7 of the GENSO Working Group Guidelines.
Thanks, Marika. Amar, are you okay with that? Okay.
Yeah, I'd be more than happy to have staff here.
Okay. Good. I see that in the chat. Okay, thanks. Okay, very good. Thanks, Marika. Thanks, Amar. All right. Going on to the general comments. And the first one is G1 is from Carlos, and this is another one where I don't feel qualified to talk to myself. I put a question mark on this, so let me encourage people to take a look at that, and maybe you can help out here. And this may be another one we need to reach out to Carlos on. This one, I frankly don't know how to react to it based on, and I'm saying that in the context of everything we've done over the last however many months we've been doing this. Anybody help me out there, Marika?
Yeah, this is Rick. Maybe we can just refer him to the annex, which I think outlines quite clearly the different roles and who is responsible for the different steps of the process. Because if I read his comment, I think he's asking for clarity on the overall process, who is involved, who is responsible. And I think that is actually done quite well in the framework, which I think for each step it's specified who is the lead, which other the departments or groups may be involved, I think Carlos did indicate that he hasn't been following the conversation of the working group very closely, so maybe that's a part of the report he overlooked. So maybe directing him there, and we can follow up as well to see if that addresses his concern and maybe a way of dealing with his comment.
Thanks, Marika. That sounds like a good suggestion to me. Does anybody have any other suggestions in that regard?
Yeah, it's Alan. If I can paraphrase what he's saying, assuming I understood it properly, he said, this is a very confusing situation, and it's likely to get more confusing. Yes.
Thanks, I think, Alan.
Well, it's true. Look, we've been talking about this for, what, a year and a half? And what we've come up with now that we think we understand the situation is a whole bunch of new processes, and we've heard discussion here as to how will we decide which one to do and what if there are competing processes and a lot of questions like that. That's the reality of the work of what we're doing. So I sympathize, but I don't think we're going to fix it.
Thank you. I think you're probably right. On that assessment. Any other comments on Carlos's comment, G1? Okay. Going then to G2, which is from the BC, my interpretation of that is that it was supportive. And really, I don't think there's any action item, so we could say thanks probably. Anything else on G2? And I believe It's the same thing for the IPC, but we have someone from the IPC here that we can pick on. In G3, I think it's a similar thing, although I was a little bit confused in the second paragraph there, Greg, and maybe you can help me out. The IPC supports including the recommendations in the SG's final report. Is that referring to the IPC's? No, they're not an SG. Let's see. What is SG's final report referring to there? You know?
This is Greg. It might be the Surgeon General or the Solicitor General or...
Now, Greg.
I think it was a wandering finger on a keyboard, it looks like.
It probably was the WG and not the SG, the S sitting directly below the W. So,
although I would go with the Surgeon General.
I think so. We've proceeded.
Maybe it's the working group's final
report. I think it's the WG's final report, although we have been going through this with surgical precision.
Yeah, okay.
Been doctored pretty well.
Okay. Okay, that's fine. And I would think that the response is similar to the BC's response. Noted and thanks. Is that good? Okay. Not here seeing any objections. G4, the NCSG. And I think I need your help here, Amr, on this one.
Sorry. Yeah, I think this was actually a question on whether this was intended or whether it was somehow a mistake in the initial report. On page 69 in, I think it was Annex E, the description or the consensus levels required to approve recommendations coming out of an EPDP refer to the consensus levels required to approve a charter, a PDP working group charter in the bylaws, instead of referring to the consensus levels required to approve PDP working group recommendations. So I was wondering if there was a reason why these specific consensus levels in the bylaws were selected, or whether it was a mistake. The bylaws that were referred to were paragraphs 9D to F in section 3 of article 10. While it seems to me that the more reasonable paragraphs would be H to L in the same section of the same article 10.
Thank you, Amr. I see Marika's hands up. Go ahead, Marika.
It is, Marika. I'm actually trying to look up the exact paragraph, but I think this is probably something where, we just need to double-check. I think the intention is that a new section would be created in Article 10 to reflect the new voting thresholds that are associated with these processes, and maybe we didn't indeed refer to the numbers correctly, but I think that is at least the intent behind it. So it wouldn't be referring to an existing provision, but a new provision would be created that specifically calls out the voting requirements for an EPDP and the other processes that do not have a simple majority standard vote.
Thank you, Marika. Amr?
Yes, thanks, Marika. That's understood. However, even if a new section or new paragraphs are provided in the bylaw or are put into the bylaws for the consensus levels required to adopt EPDP working group recommendations, wouldn't it make more sense that they be the same as PDP working group recommendations, and not the consensus levels required to adopt a PDP working group charter? But that's the real question we have here. Thanks.
Thanks, Amr. And what you're saying, without looking at all the details, makes sense to me. But staff's going to double check on this and then come back to us next week so we can make sure we're all on the same page on this one. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. If I can just maybe ask Amr to confirm to me where to land, because I'm looking at Annex E in Section 4 that just has, you know, four lines and doesn't make any reference to the ICANN bylaw. So I suspect I may be looking at the wrong place. So maybe if we can, you know, take this offline and Amr, if you can just maybe explain to me exactly what you're looking for, and we then can confirm, you know, whether indeed it was an oversight or how we can resolve it, because it's not exactly clear to me at this stage.
Okay, thanks, Marika. And if the two of you can, make sure you're on the same page, and then we can come back to this one next week. So we only have two items then to cover. It's G5 and G6, G5 from the ISPCP and G6 from the ALAC. So I'll let Alan comment on that. But I think they're both supportive. Are both of those issues of, again, noted and thanks like we did earlier for the BC and IPC? Alan, do you want to respond with regard to G6?
As soon as I actually finish reading it.
Go ahead.
I think it is, Alan.
I think this I was just a motherhood statement saying we support the overall direction.
That's what
I don't think there was a hidden message.
Okay, good.
It's very subtle. If it's hidden that well, it's very, very subtle.
So thank you for that, though. We appreciate that. All right, so we're coming to our end of the meeting here, and we have we made it through. Congratulations to all of you. And so our meeting next week, we will wrap up our responses to the comments. Now, staff has been very good about submitting fairly shortly after our meeting an updated version of the review tool. And so I know they will do that again this time. So please take a look at that, because in addition to the follow-up items that we have from today that we'll talk about on our agenda next week, we will also provide, there will also be opportunity to see if there's anything else in this response to public comments that needs to be addressed. And then it'll be a matter of then staff will be able to finalize the response to public comments and post that, and then we can work on the finalizing the two versions of the report, the red line and the clean version, for submission to the council. Marika, go ahead.
This is Marika. Maybe just a suggestion here, because I'm wondering as well if you know, the review of the responses, if that's something we can do on list. But I think from the staff side, we may need a little bit more time to incorporate that into, to change the initial report to a final version, taking into account the changes that have been suggested and as well as some of the standard changes that will need to be made. So I'm wondering if the group may want to consider not going ahead with next week's meeting, and that we'll then try to aim to have a revised a version available for working group review the week thereafter, and that, you know, in that interim period, working group members are expected to review the responses that we've provided in the public comment review tool, and you know, we can work out some of the, I think, open issues. I think, you know, there's an item that we'll consult with Amr on, and again, I think that's something we may be able to do on the list as well. Unless, of course, you think it requires a meeting to discuss, and then we'll still have, you know, an updated report available in 2 weeks.
So, first of all, I wasn't suggesting that there be an updated report available before next week's meetings. I was only suggesting that the review tool be updated so that people could review that. So let me be clear on that, okay? Secondly, I'm okay if we can resolve it on the list, the remaining issues, if that happens. Some people are really good at that, some aren't. That's my only concern, because you're going to need resolution of these remaining items that we didn't resolve today before you can work on the final report. And Similarly, and maybe what we need to do is to really validate that and deal with my concern about people responding on the list would be to actually do a poll of are there any more issues? And if we find out that there aren't, then we don't need a meeting. But does anybody have any comments on that? Do you want to skip the meeting next week and try and do it on the list? I would like to see some confirmation from all the working group members that we are, in fact, satisfied so that we have everything we need to do the final report. Alan, go ahead.
My tendency, and you've heard this from me before, is to keep the meeting scheduled and, depending on the traffic on the list, either hold it or cancel it.
Thanks.
It's really hard to schedule something ad hoc, and we have a meeting that's on most people's calendars, so
that's
I
right.
would leave it.
Yeah, okay. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I think in a similar vein as Alan, what we can maybe do is I should be able to push out the updated report, I think, after this call, and maybe we can just give everyone until, you know, Monday 23:59 UTC to flag any other issues that they think need to be considered or discussed. And then I think on Tuesday, the chairs can then decide based on what has come in whether or not a meeting is needed or not.
That's I'm comfortable with that. Michael, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to express, I mean, on my own behalf, and I think the same situation holds for Jay Scott and may hold for Greg or other members of the IPC, certainly, but we're going to be out of pocket at the INTA annual meeting through next week, and frankly, there's very little time to be able to give the attention I think this deserves since we're on the final lap of this. I mean, between now and the end of next week, frankly, I'm going to be out of pocket. And I'm certain Jay Scott will be because he does have presidential duties this year.
He has already said that he will not be available, so that is correct. So everybody else except the IPC members on the call, we have an opportunity next week.
Wait a minute.
I think the plan is for the chairs and vice chairs to decide on Tuesday whether a meeting's needed, and I think everybody knows we're not going to do anything to take advantage of the IPC, even though it sounded like a good idea. So we will take that approach. Let's be real clear in the message, Marika, that we send out to the list for those that weren't on the call of where we're at and that they need to, you know, meet the deadline of Monday so that we can, and then depending on that, we will decide whether to hold the meeting and that we're moving ahead with a final report after that. Any questions or comments? Any other issues we need to cover? Alan, is that an old hand?
Chuck, all my hands are old.
Yeah, mine are too, Alan, as you know. So, okay. All right. Hey, thanks, everybody. We had a great meeting. We made it through the comments with just a few little items still hanging that we'll hopefully resolve on the list. If everybody be diligent about trying to help resolve those on the list, that would be great. And if we don't talk next week, we'll talk in 2 weeks.
Okay, then. Bye.
Thank you, Chuck. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks. Bye.
Bye, all.
Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines. Brian, if you can please stop the recordings.